I'm going to call the January 6th Committee of the Whole meeting to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson.
Here.
Alderman Dandrea.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Present.
Alderwoman Wilhelm is excused. Alderman Barber.
Here.
Alderman Taylor is excused. Alderman Nelson.
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise. Join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get started, I want to welcome Mayor Knightsky from Greenfield and Chief Cohn from Greenfield. Thanks for coming, guys. They've been a partner of ours in this effort that we're going to hear about in a minute. We also have a bunch of folks from Waste Management, but we'll get to them in a little bit. With that, we'll move on to item B, which is a presentation by Wisconsin Policy Forum on its report entitled Got Your Back, Jack. Mr. Rob Henkin. Did I say Wisconsin Policy Forum?
Yes, you did.
Got it right. Rob, please introduce yourself so we have it on record.
Sure. My name is Rob Henkin. I'm the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And I want to thank you, Mr. Mayor, and members of the council for giving me the opportunity. What I would like to do this evening is really just spend about 15 minutes or so to summarize at a pretty high level the details of a report that we released in December that I'm going to assume all of you have at least perused at a high level, and then, of course, would be willing to answer any questions and actually deflect any difficult questions to the chief who's sitting next to me. Only kidding. We can tag team if need be.
I was planning on the other way around.
So let's get started. Again, this report came out in December. It was prompted by a request both from Mayor Olson and Mayor Knightsky to bring back the Wisconsin Policy Forum to take another look. As many of you may recall, we did a similar study back in 2012 in which we looked not only at the four Zone D departments but also at Oak Creek. Came out with a report at that time. I think it stimulated a lot of interesting discussion, but did not stimulate any action. So we were requested at this point. Things have changed, but many of the challenges, as we say in the report, have remained the same. So we were asked to come in and take another look. Before getting into the details of this particular report, I just wanted to share with you, because actually this is about the 10th different service sharing report that the Wisconsin Policy Forum, formerly the Public Policy Forum, have conducted since 2012. The one that we did for you folks at that time was actually our first. We have done several since that time, and we've learned a few lessons. One of the foremost lessons, and this is the way I always start presentations like this, and we've done service sharing work not only in the area of fire and rescue and EMS, but also in the areas of public health and parks and recreation. But really, if the reason you're interested in looking at enhanced sharing or consolidation is to save money, then it's possible that you're barking up the wrong tree. It really depends on which set of services we are talking about, but for the most part, what we like to emphasize is that the real promise in terms of service sharing and potentially consolidating functions is, as the slide says, in the potential to allow individual governments to join forces to achieve a level of service and a quality of service that they otherwise would not be able to achieve by themselves in terms of acting alone. And that can be for a variety of reasons, but that's where we typically see the most direct potential benefits in terms of enhanced service sharing and consolidation options. And we would add, and we've in a different project that we've worked on, we really scoured the national literature on service sharing. Clearly, national research cautions that pursuit of service sharing only may make sense under the right conditions. So I sit here before you not as a zealot, not as one who believes that sharing and consolidation makes sense in all cases, in all places, and in all circumstances, but to recognize when it does make sense and what sort of the range of options is. Let me just add one more slide before getting to the to the crux of this study, we typically look at six criteria when we come in and think about what types of options in terms of enhanced service sharing or consolidation may make sense. The first is there some type of demand that's coming upon a government and a certain governmental functions for either new technology or equipment? Are there new state or federal regulations or other factors that are making costs unaffordable for municipalities themselves? Are key staff scheduled for retirement, or are there other organizational developments that suggest an opportunity for new service models? Are there areas where you can clearly pinpoint cost inefficiency or redundancies among neighboring municipalities when it comes to the provision of municipal services that do suggest potential for cost savings through service sharing? Could service sharing improve the level, type, or mix of services for a particular municipal function? Do we have a situation where one municipality is providing a service that is benefiting the larger region? Or could it be that a couple of municipalities within one larger region are providing some level of service that all of the municipalities are benefiting from, but all may not be equally paying for? And are capital replacement needs intensive? And this happens to be one of the reasons that fire and EMS is most commonly looked at when it comes to service sharing and consolidation opportunities, because, of course, these are very capital-intensive functions. And it is on the capital side, despite what I said earlier about not having the potential for cost savings drive this discussion, but it is on the capital side where oftentimes the savings can be most significant. So we typically come in and immediately look at these six criteria, and without giving away the ending before I've even started, I would submit to you that for at least four of these six, it would get a check next to the yes box as having potential. Again, does that mean that there are clear solutions in terms of enhanced sharing or consolidation? No, but it does mean that when we see three or more of these check off yes, we think that there's potential to look deeper. And so for us, looking deeper here just made a lot of sense. So let's get into the study now, just to ground everybody. I think you're all familiar with the approximate locations of the Zone D fire departments. This is your region. If you were starting from scratch and designing a fire and rescue service for Zone D as a whole, is this necessarily where you would put your stations? Maybe not. That said, in terms of where they're located for each of the municipalities, there's a lot of logic. In this case, we are certainly not suggesting that this region as a whole could get by with any fewer numbers of station locations. For Chief Meyer, we did a study for Cudahy, South Milwaukee, and St. Francis a few years ago, and in that study we did feel there was potentially to eliminate one of the four stations serving that region. Here, that really was not on the table. Just some more basic background information, but this is a very important slide. In this case, the calls for service are expanding. They're growing for each of the four municipalities. Obviously, there is greater growth being shown in Greendale, Hales Corners, and here in Franklin. There are lots of factors contributing to this growth. In some cases, it could be an aging population. In your case, certainly new development is having something to do with it. In some cases, it's just the way citizens are tending to use a call for EMS as a means of addressing their healthcare issues. We didn't get into a lot of analysis around the whys, but the fact is that in this case, for each of the four communities, this is an issue and this is a challenge. And actually, while it's a challenge, it sort of enhances the prospects for looking at working together, given that you all do face a common problem, although, again, it's more pronounced for some of you than for others of you. One of the first things we do when we come in is we take a look at how the stations, not only where they're located, but how they're being staffed. And so this is a big part of the story for this study. You can see here what are the sort of desired average daily shift staffing levels for each of the departments. And a few things in each of the stations. And a few basic things stand out here. One of the things that stands out is the relatively low level of staffing at your southernmost station, Franklin 2. Another thing that stands out for Hales Corners, we're showing four total staff typically, but of course, for three of those four, they are using paid on-premises, part-time, hourly workers. We see a robust level of staffing at the two Greenfield stations. That said, the call volumes in Greenfield demand a robust level of staffing. So this just gives you a sense that at any given time in this region, the shift staffing is about 33. And so that's something to keep in mind as we look at some of the options going forward. When it comes to non-shift staffing, so individuals who are not being assigned on regular shifts but are essentially working closer to eight-hour days, you can see the staffing levels. Not surprising that Franklin and Greenfield, the two largest departments with multiple stations, have a greater number of non-shift staff. Both departments have an assistant chief as well as a chief. We're showing you other positions. Worth noting that Greenfield, in part because of a successful voter referendum, has recently added a couple of non-shift battalion chiefs. One of those battalion chiefs coordinates training, and the other coordinates emergency medical services. So they have those two positions. As you can see, for Greendale and Hales Corners, it's essentially the chief. Now, it doesn't mean that there aren't some other administrative type functions that are being provided. Here you have an administrative assistant dedicated to the fire department. There's clearly administrative work being done at the other departments, but they tend to be, that work tends to be done by regular governmental staff. But again, this gives you a picture of the non-shift staff and how the various functions are taken care of. If you're curious, in Greendale and Hales Corners, we have things like fire prevention and inspection that are essentially being handled by captains who are also working shifts. They're, of course, smaller departments with much lower call volumes, and so arguably that type of an approach is manageable. There are trade-offs, of course, in doing it in these various ways. When we look at the budgets of the four departments, what we're showing you here, 2018 spending levels. We are also showing you revenues so that the net operating expense is there. We are showing you also the net expense per capita. Essentially, three of the four communities in the same ballpark. Again, Greenfield a little higher, in part because of a successful referendum. Hales Corners, of course, is the outlier, and the reason for that is its use of paid on-premises part-time staff who are not receiving benefits. So clearly a less expensive way of providing the service. There also, however, may be trade-offs there in terms of the level of service that is able to be provided by that community. So let's get into the options. What we did, first of all, I think it's a point to emphasize that the way the forum operates here is we don't come in as the highly paid consultants who ride in on our white horse and tell you how to run your... This is true, Mayor Olson. We don't come in and try to tell you how to do your jobs. I don't know a fraction as much about fire and EMS service as your chief, nor would I purport to do so. Our approach is to be just as much a facilitator as a researcher in terms of conducting these projects. And what we try to do is engage the chiefs and develop a range of options. And there is certainly no predisposition going in as to which of these options may hold the most logic and the most sense. So the first thing we took a look at was, are there ways that the four communities and the four departments could simply enhance their level of fire and emergency medical services by enhancing the amount of service sharing that they do? And mind you, there's already a great deal of service sharing going on in terms of how Zone D operates. But the two items, the two possibilities that we came up with was the possibility for the four communities to share in potentially a training officer or a specialized EMS officer or potentially both. So instead of having each community trying to deal with training on its own and trying to potentially deal or want to deal with sort of providing a higher level of analysis and oversight and strategic operational thinking around this growing volume of EMS calls, would it make sense for the four Zone D departments to actually share staff positions that would do this for all of them? The actual day-to-day training activities would still have to be conducted by the individual departments in the case of training, but in this case, would it make sense to have a single battalion chief who works for all four communities, who could coordinate training, who could make sure that the protocols are consistent across the four departments, which arguably would be important given the extent to which they're all working together in the field, and so forth. And in this case, because Greenfield just took the step of hiring specialized positions in these areas, it wouldn't have to be done this way, but if there was interest in undertaking this approach, then the logical possibility would be to simply have the four communities share the cost of these two relatively new positions that Greenfield just created. So that would be one enhanced service sharing option. A second would be to formalize the relationship that currently exists in terms of the way that these shift-based battalion chiefs are utilized in the region. So I glossed over it when I showed the shift staffing map, but there you may have noticed that there is a battalion chief on duty at all times in Greenfield on a shift, and there is one on duty at all times here in Franklin on a shift. And for fire incidents and other major incidents, these battalion chiefs also are called to support incidents in Hales Corners and in Greendale. Hales Corners and Greendale use captains, but in terms of having the command staff at these major incidents, Franklin and Greenfield battalion chiefs are being utilized. Would it be appropriate? And so that's just done. You know, your chiefs work well together, your communities care about saving lives and about, you know, having a high level of service. And so this just sort of happens. The question is whether it should in some respect be formalized. In the case of Franklin and Greendale, might that even extend to the point where potentially there would be some type of charging for the services of your battalion chiefs when they are used in these other communities? But at the same time, that would formalize the structure for these other communities so that they would know that there are specific rules and guidelines that establish that indeed your battalion chiefs will be there for them, given their willingness potentially to pay for them, as opposed to the sort of informal nature of the agreement now.
Rob, before you, Chief, could you, you know how I feel about this slide. This is the slide that I think is key to us. But could you, for the listening public, and I'm putting you on the spot, perhaps give me an example of how the first bullet point might be of strong benefit to the community?
Well, I think the first point, it would help to standardize training across the entire region.
So if somebody's got PNB, they get a response from Chief Cohn's department rather than us.
These
same
positions
treatment
that you're talking about in that first bullet point are more administrative positions. There is somewhat of a trade-off there in that that person, it's a shared position, but it's also a borrowed position. They're not necessarily in our station available to respond on our mm-hmm. calls in real time. That's the trade-off for that particular position. As far as sharing our on-shift battalion chiefs, that's something that we've done, and it works very smoothly, and it could be expanded on.
I guess what I was getting at, Chief, is if there was a shared training officer, we could be reasonably assured that the training across the departments would be uniform, and that we could expect that at any given response for any given critical incident, that the treatment level would be the highest possible, and the operational efficiencies between the officers at the scene would be smoother than if we had a paramedic rig from Greenfield trained by themselves and a paramedic rig from Franklin trained by our guys. There is an opportunity there for lack of efficiency. So this would provide better service to our constituents.
I would agree with that statement. The only thing is we use our administrative chiefs, like I said, not only to respond to incidents, but also to help cover fill-in shifts when the other shift battalion chiefs are off, in order to reduce our overtime expenditure. And we don't necessarily pick that back up as part of that first bullet point.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks, Rob.
So, and just to give you an idea, and again, this is by no means a slam dunk, and there are trade-offs. Hypothetically speaking, if there was a desire to look at having a joint training officer, and again, to address Chief Remington's issue, I mean, maybe that person is not housed in the Greenfield Department. Maybe that is truly somehow a shared position that also does have the capability to provide other forms of backup for each of the departments. I mean, it could work in various different ways, but if we were to look at the $141,000 cost in terms of pay and benefits, if one way of divvying that up could be based on number of calls, there are other ways you could do it. You could do the North Shore Fire Department model, which has equal for calls and population and equalized values. They're each weighted equally, and that's the way they allocate their costs. So there are different ways to do it, but just as illustration, if you did it based on call volume and divided up the $141,000, as you can see, the cost for Franklin would be $44,000. In this case, Greenfield would obviously save money, but the trade-off for Greenfield would be that now it would have to share this position as opposed to having it solely to itself. So this just illustrates the fiscal impact. The next series of options that we looked at would be to simply modify the response framework. And so there are two possibilities here. One would be to essentially knock down the municipal boundaries and to employ a closest and most appropriate unit response framework so that when there is an incident and that call comes into dispatch, even if that call is from the northeastern part of Franklin, if the closest and most appropriate response would come from a Greenfield station, then that's where the response would come from. That could apply not only for situations like that, but if it so happens that that Franklin 3 in that situation might be the closest and most appropriate, but that station, the engine is out, and there's no backup there, then instead of calling in somebody from Franklin 1, it could be that Greendale or Greenfield is closer. So that's how closest unit response would work. The other piece here is dynamic resource deployment, whereby it's sort of a seamless operation, so at very busy times, backup for individual stations could come, and backfilling at individual stations could come from other communities instead of stations within that community. And that is actually a framework that is currently, as many of you know, being implemented already by several of the communities in Milwaukee County. Wisconsin Policy Forum actually gave a Salute to Local Government award for that level of cooperation. But again, just to sort of show you how this could work, as you can see, there are parts of each community that, hypothetically speaking, if not always, certainly at times, might get a closer and faster response from a station in a neighboring community. But right now, the way things work, obviously, we other than the automatic aid that occurs for Hales Corners and Greendale, that's not the way it works. Now, in order to implement this, there would have to be a next step in terms of being able to technologically coordinate dispatching. That step, as I understand it, is being taken by Milwaukee County to try to come up with a system whereby each of your individual dispatch centers actually would have the ability to dispatch across municipal boundaries, but you're not quite there yet. But this is something that, hypothetically, without doing anything to merge departments, could be done and could potentially give you some of the benefits of a larger merged department without having to give up your local control and get into some of the other issues involved with a full-fledged merger. Finally, we did take a look at a consolidated department. We say very clearly in this report that we were aware going in that there was not a lot of enthusiasm, at least among a couple of the municipalities in Zone D, for looking at this option and little interest in pursuing it. We felt very strongly that that situation could change and that it was going to be hopefully valuable context for you and for each of the four communities to see what this might look like and what some of the benefits might be. So the first thing we looked at was how would the non-shift framework change in a consolidated department, how would we construct an administrative and command structure? You see that on this slide. By point of comparison, there are 11.5 FTEs in this framework as compared to 13 non-shift staff currently among the four departments. So an estimated dollar savings here of about $239,000 per year based on 2018 actual budgeted figures. When we look at hypothetical shift staffing, I'll emphasize the word hypothetical. There are many different ways to skin this cat. But essentially, what you notice here is we constructed this with the same 33 for average shift staffing among the seven departments. But the noticeable changes here are a shift of resources from the north to the south.